The Dialogue with Clement Maniatela.
It's not just another roundtable discussion.
Let's walk the talk on 702.
On our Thursday dialogue this morning, we are talking about devolving police powers. And I'm asking if that devolving police powers to provinces and municipalities can lead to better policing. Now, this devolution of power implies that provinces and regions will have more say in the formation of their own crime prevention strategies as well as the implementation thereof. But can it lead to improvements in policing and in crime reduction? You may have seen the leader of Build One South Africa, Musi Maimane, recently joining a number of organizations calling for the localization of police. He's joined the likes of, I think, AfriForum in the past has made a similar case, the Democratic Alliance, and others who have long called on policing powers to be devolved to provinces, particularly in the Western Cape. And they argue that the devolution of power would mean that provinces and regions have more say in the formulation of those strategies, the implementation. But then this debate on the devolution of police function has also gotten the police minister to indicate that they think that things are okay in having the police service as a national government's competency. So what do you think here? Should we devolve police powers to provinces and municipalities? And will this lead to better policing on the ground? You can give us a call on 011-883-0702 to share your thoughts with us, or send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702. Let me introduce you to my guest this morning. We've got Dr. Chris de Kock, who is an independent analyst who's joining us on the line. Dr. de Kock, thank you so much for making time. Welcome back to the show.
Okay.
Can you hear us, Dr. de Kock?
I can hear you properly.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for joining us for this chat. We also have Johan Berger, who's a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. Johan, thank you for making time for us. Good morning.
Good morning.
We are also joined by A.B. Isaacs, who's the chairperson of the Cape Flood Safety Forum. We'll also bring him on a little later. We also have Musi Maimane, who's the leader of Build One South Africa. Musi, thank you so much for joining us as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. Good morning to fellow 702ers and fellow South Africans. It's great to be on your show. Truly appreciate it.
I want to start off with you, Musi. You wrote an article just yesterday, that was published yesterday, where you were arguing that you must give police powers to provincial and local government to protect communities. Just help us understand your argument.
Yeah. One, I think in 1994, in dealing with the new dispensation, I think we settled on a national SAPS fundamentally because we wanted to look at not giving each province its own military. But what has now happened is that as we've matured, we are now at a point where we need to rethink policing. We've lost the battle against murder. We've lost the battle against sexual violence. And therefore, we can't just keep doing more of the same and hope for different outcomes. My argument simply sits this, is that we aren't giving birth to new criminals every day. What we're finding is that the same criminals are committing crime over and over again and getting away with it. Conviction rates for murder are below 20% at this stage, which means that there's something at A, the collection of evidence, and ultimately the arresting of the perpetrators of murder and violence in our country. So our proposal is that, for example, crime intelligence and competencies can be devolved lower down. Why? It allows for people to specialize in their crime respective to the province. Secondly, it increases the manpower that you don't have to have a metro police who sits and checks traffic lights only and fails to really assist in combating crime and identifying that. And thirdly, what it also does do is that it allows for ultimately better coordination at a lower level, because you've got a bigger force, you've got more people, more eyes on the criminals, better intelligence, and then you can resource policing at a local level. You can ensure that actually a police station, if it needs to be off the grid so that there's no load shedding, you do that. You can ensure that ultimately police vehicles are better equipped so that they know what the conditions of their particular locale is. So I really think that we need to rethink the model at which we've approached crime. And certainly, I think ultimately identifying the most competent people to lead the police at a localized level, I really believe learning from lessons from countries like Germany, countries like the US, you can be a little bit more effective at fighting crime.
Dr. de Kock, if indeed this devolution happened, does that necessarily lead to improvements in policing? Or what makes the difference is whether or not you've got the right people employed on the ground?
Yeah, I want to take it like start off with saying that in my life, during my career at the police for nearly 18 years, and now even in retirement where I've joined the community structures, I have seen good stations and bad stations. And it all depends on the management of that station. If the station is not managed properly, then you will have bad policing and you will have no difference to your crime levels. Actually, the crime will just shot up. Well, if you have a good management, and that management have good relations with the community and with the community structures, the CPF structures, and there is a constant consultation and they look at problems together, there you have a definite that crime has either stabilized or it will decrease. And I must say, even in the present structure, without changing anything, you can have a station which is functioning optimally. The problem is bad management at all levels of our police. And that is why we have this absolute skyrocketing of a crime like murder, for example.
And Johan, your thoughts on the kind of changes we would see if this is the way to go?
Yeah, listen, I agree both with what Mr. Maimani said, although I would qualify some of it now, and of course with what Dr. de Kock has just said. I think there will always be a place for a national police organization, such as you have in countries like the USA and others, with the federal police, the FBI and so on. So keeping in mind that, you know, we have seen a tremendous growth in organized crime in South Africa. In fact, studies puts us at 7 out of the 193, I think, countries belonging to the United Nations. So this is not something that a local police structure can properly deal with. But then on the other hand, I also agree that much more policing power should be allocated to local police structures. And it's always amazed me why we have accepted the fact that municipal or metropolitan police services have so limited policing powers. And I think this is something that should be looked at. And I mean, just the new development that we've seen in the last few years with the establishment of the LEAP program in the Western Cape, and the Gauteng crime prevention wardens. But they were appointed not in terms of the Police Service Act, of course, in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. And they also, face a number of difficulties in terms of what precisely their functions should be and how to perform those functions. So, yeah, I think, you know, to sum up, we need a national police agency with all its capabilities, including intelligence, to properly deal with especially organized crime or very, very serious crimes that can be identified. And then you need local level, but then properly empowered in terms of their policing powers.
Musi, what would this mean for the cooperation between the police forces and private security providers?
Well, I think, again, it requires a question of innovation. One of the things South Africa has now started to note is the fact that in 1994, there were more police relative to private security. In 2024, there are more private security guards than there are police. In fact, certain people joke to say that even private companies are now protecting police stations. That tells you the state of siege that we are under. I think there's innovation that we can use. I certainly am supportive of initiatives where you can Uberize policing so that you have integration, so that the closest vehicle to a contact crime can respond quickly and ensure that if you are feeling under threat, if you click it like the Uber, if the private security car is closest, if the police car is closest, or if the Metro Police is closest, they can be able to respond first so that we can deal with more visibility on that, including these police volunteers that have been put forward. I think we need to take a strong stance on how collectively we can be able to fight crime. We will have to look at how that works in the broader criminal justice system to ensure that ultimately the collection of evidence, the admissibility of evidence, and the conviction of criminals is on the table. I think the last point I'd like to make just relative to this is that, let me take my community of Dobsonville as a simple one. Mm. When you look at the proportion of police per citizen, the ratio internationally sometimes can be for about 206 police officers per 100,000, or you can aggregate it out to maybe one policeman for every for less than 500 citizens. In my community, it's 1 to 1,200. So that tells you that if a detective is fighting a crime, they've really got no capacity to be able to focus on what needs to be. So I think an increased number of people who have got eyes on crime, and to the previous speaker, and I really appreciate this, appropriate leadership is vital. When you've got station commanders that have been moved from place to place, some of them without the proper training, as is the what's happened as a flaw of the police, you are going to end up with a mismanagement, not only of the police station, but of all the resources to fight crime. Mm. So certainly, I think that we can incorporate part of the private security industry in being able to be first respondents in really dealing with what a country that feels like it's at war, when you feel how citizens feel like they're living in fear, but the criminals are walking around freely.
Yeah. Dr. de Kock, is it a money capacity issue or is it a policy issue? I imagine it would be difficult, and this is an argument that's been made in the past by those who are against it, that it would be difficult to implement budget allocations, you know, and the employment of the police officers as well. Who determines that?
Yeah. No, I think that will be difficult. Can I just link on with this private security?
Yeah.
At present, in the station where I live, and I'm not going to mention names, because I'm, as I say, part of the community police structures, and I don't talk with that cap on today. I talk as a crime analyst. But in our station, it worked like this. Every Monday, the community forum, two members of the community forum, the chair and deputy chair, attend the crime combating forum of the station, where crime is discussed in detail. The hotspots are shown, you know, all of that information which is vital to perform, and especially crime prevention. Then that person will go, or one of those will at least go, to a security meeting, a security forum meeting at the church. And here you will find most of your security companies and even managers of security estates. And you will find the police briefing them, especially exactly on the figures and the information which was given and shared at the crime combating forum. The community structures will also be there, the chairs, say, of the CPFs or those who can make it, because some are working people. There they do then some planning for the week ahead to say there's a hotspot at the corner of this street and that street. And can the community, the security companies, because you must remember, they have to respond to their clients. I mean, their clients is giving them money. But if there's off time or time when they are not driving around because fuel is also expensive, then they can be visible at that hotspot. They may just replace that hotspot to somewhere else, but in the end, the criminals will get... will see this is a high risk for them, and they will move to some other station. And that is what I'm saying, that this is due to the good management of the station, which realized that you need the community. You need the community to solve the problems. You have to make the community aware how they can prevent crime. Because there's so much crime, that we can't only depend on the police or security companies.
I'm going to take some calls now on 011-883-0702. We've got Jabu who's calling us from Four Ways. Jabu, good morning.
Morning, Clement and the listeners. Can we get technical here a little bit? Because the discussion so far, it doesn't show that in the absence of devolution of powers, all the things that your guests are talking about cannot be implemented. For an example, my simple question is, what is it that the current police structures doesn't have at the local government level that they would have if powers were to be devolved? For an example, the current structure, we've got provincial commissioners, and each province has got a provincial commissioner, has got its own provincial intelligence services, has got its own court, has got all of the support services, gender-based violence offices, whatsoever, and the like. So my question is, which powers are those that do not exist at the local level now, which the proponents of the devolution of police powers are actually praying for? So they need to be technical, they need to be specific in terms of saying the current police structure doesn't allow for X, Y, and Z. Mostly talks about the ratio of police to the citizens and the like. I mean, that is not, and I don't think that is linked to any devolution of powers, because the issue of ratio of police to citizens, I mean, that can be actually be addressed even now. It doesn't need to have, you don't need anything to be devolved. But for me, let us go back to the technical issue of saying, which are those powers that they need now at local government level that the current police structure doesn't provide, so that we don't, so that our discussion can be focused.
Thank you, Jabu. Great question there. Johan, you want to take that?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. I want to come back also later on to the private security industry issue. But as far as the powers at local level is concerned, I think this is something that will have to be debated very, very closely. There are issues, crime issues. And if you take the Western Cape as a good example, and there are many other examples, we have gang violence and crimes involving those gangs. Certainly, those are issues that should be become the focus of the police at local level. But then, on at the same time, there may be the involvement of crime syndicates with an international connection that may be completely outside the reach of that police at the local level only. So there should be then an involvement of the national police or the police with a broader or national powers, such as a federal police agency in the U.S. and so on. So there should be a shared responsibility, and then there should be a local responsibility depending on the types of crime, the extent to which they are local or localized or not. And this is one of the complaints in the past, is that the national police, in setting up currently in South Africa, SAPS, they set up their priorities and objectives on a broad scale, focusing on priorities nationally, and to some extent then ignoring the local needs in many.
Isn't that
communities.
The responsibility of the provincial commissioners, though, because they can zoom in on the different areas of that particular province and prioritize resources accordingly?
Yeah, that is absolutely what they should be doing. The problem is that they often neglect to do that properly, and they simply try to implement the national priorities or priorities that are set nationally, and that is a huge problem. So I think that is what needs to be looked at. Is a police capability at provincial level that are able to deal with local issues or then issues that are prominent in that particular province or a particular area within a province. And then you have, you will have to understand that there will always have to be room for a national police to be involved as well, relating to what is regarded as national priorities. And then, of course, the involvement of crime syndicates within international connections.
Musi, you wanted to come in there?
Yeah, I do. I, firstly, as I started off earlier, I raised the question of crime intelligence. I want to use a suburb of Johannesburg that is in the process of piloting this issue. What has happened is that citizens, because they are under siege of crime, managed to set up a private security company, gave it a certain level of being able to increase its ability to be able to track which criminals it is. And there are some key learnings there, because when we were working on this policy, we didn't just look at only international best practice. And whilst I agree with the mixed models of federal and localized, I do think there's something here to be learned. One is, when you bring crime intelligence lower down, you immediately know the predictability and the frequency of where crime occurs and on what conditions. Now, if you leave that to national police, it's very difficult to create that intelligence across the country. Whereas if you localize it, you can know in this suburb, here are the actual criminals, here's how they operate, and you can better predict so that you can deal with the issues of prevention rather than always the cure part. And then secondly, when you look at national crime intelligence numbers, they are sitting at 7,856 with a limited budget to increase that. So bringing it locally means that, as I said, you can then merge it even with some of the resources that metros already have, such as Metro Police. Johannesburg has probably got one of the largest Metro Police force that is available for the country. But at this stage, they are not being used to fight other crimes. They simply are looking at traffic management, which I think we can increase the scope and be able to merge the two. So I certainly think, to me, you would increase the number, given the fact that the detective number and crime intelligence are low. Furthermore, intelligence is on the ground, you are quickly much more available to identify who the crooks are. The last thing I'd want to say, Clement, is we need to have a vision in this country about safe communities. And that is not only just dealing with contact crime, murder, etc. It's also looking at the ecosystems, the conditions that lead to crime. How are we partnering with schools so that better education and how young people are not susceptible to crime and criminals? How do we know in which communities? If you live in the Western Cape, how do we identify gang behavior, which is in some ways unique and in particular communities? How do you prevent that at a school level to make sure it doesn't become feeding grounds for more crime that occurs post-school or even during school hours? So I do think once you localize it, you can actually deal with a vision for safer communities rather than just simply looking at crime as national statistics. Lastly, when you look at even the role of Minister Begite, he arrives in communities, makes a big fanfare, tells the people that he's going to deploy police, which is abnormal that a actual politician is now commanding the police service, which is a bit bizarre in a country such as this one, because he then commits the police to doing things sometimes that they are not, it's not within their mandate to be able to do, and then politicizes crime. Whereas actually what we need to do is allow the appropriate leadership at a local level, the partnership with CPFs, station commanders to be capacitated. So when people have an issue about crime, they have a face, they have a relationship, and they know what the aggregate force can be. That's the advantage of being able to bring it closer to the ground.
Yeah. Johan, I'll give you an opportunity after the headlines to go back to that as the issue you wanted to address as well. But also, we'll go to your calls and your WhatsApps as well after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines. It's 11:32.
The Dialogue with Clement Manyathela.
It's not just another roundtable discussion.
Let's walk the talk on 7:02.
It's 24 minutes now before 12 o'clock. On our Thursday dialogue with this morning, we're talking about devolving police powers to provinces and municipalities and whether or not it will lead to better policing. Will it make a difference on the ground? I want to bring in Johan now, Johan Berger, who is a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. Johan, there's an issue you wanted to raise before we went to the headlines.
Yeah. Just a correction, I'm no longer with the Institute for Security Studies. Oh. I'm a I'm a consultant on crime and security issues.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, but I think what I just need to point out, and to this extent it supports what Mr. Maimani is calling for.
Yeah.
And this is the fact that the failures of the police service to properly deal with our high crime levels and to stop the rising crime rates in most of our serious and violent crimes, and clearly failing in a number of ways, has led to an almost natural evolvement of private institutions organizing themselves into groups, whether formal or informal, to deal with crime. In fact, many community police forums have now taken up an operational role far removed from the initial police civilian oversight and advisory roles. But there is a very interesting initiative that's accepted formally by the police. It's called the E2 initiative. E2 refers to Eyes and Ears Initiative. And they were set up in cooperation between Business Against Crime, South Africa, the private security industry, and the South African Police Service. And over time, others such as SABRIC, Metro Police agencies, and others, Traffic Police, Gauteng, have become involved in this initiative. And they are using a lot of advanced technology to accumulate what we now can refer to as intelligence that is operationally usable. And they are linked to the police's operational command centers at provincial level and also at national level. So this is an initiative that goes a long way towards supporting improved policing, but making use of the presence of private security companies and other institutions all across the country. Mm-hmm. And it's a very recent development. I think it's about 2-3 years now since this initiative started. And this is just a visible sign of communities and institutions losing trust and confidence in the police and simply taking over the initiative to fight against crime. But we need to formalize this in the way that Mr. Maimani has suggested, but there are different ways, of course, of doing this.
Mm. Yeah, AB Isaacs is the chairperson of the Cape Flat Safety Forum. AB, thanks for also joining this chat. Good morning.
Good morning to you and your listeners.
Yeah. What difference do you think this would make as someone who is in the Cape Flats? You see the kind of resources that are needed there, the kind of challenges when it comes to police dealing with the particular crime in that part of the Western Cape. Would this make a difference on the ground?
I think from our side, we've officially indicated as the Cape Flats Safety Forum, we are not in support of the evolution of policing power. We firmly hold the view that there should be an integrated approach from all spheres of government, local, provincial, national, and all departments to eradicate crime. For an example, we've seen that there are certain departments that does not play their key principle role. For an example, social development. So yes, having policing on the ground, having more police will not resolve issues. We need to start addressing the core fundamental social economic issues of our society.
Okay. It's 20 minutes now before 12 o'clock.
The Dialogue with Clement Manyathela.
It's not just another roundtable discussion.
Let's walk the talk on 702.
Good morning, Clement. Clement, you know, even Solim Simang mentioned this, that crime in KZN is not the same as crime in the Western Cape. In the Western Cape, you have gangsterism, you have a different type of crime. In KwaZulu-Natal, you have these contract killers, in Kabi, in Gauteng, in Zamazamas, and provinces deal with different crimes. So we need to change the way we actually approach crime. And the issue of bringing in 6,000 amapanyazas who will be walking in gang, in groups of about 50, not doing anything. You need more intelligence on the ground. and a fewer policemen, the intelligence will give you, guide you to where and who the criminals are, and then it's just the easiest of things that can be done. Intelligence, not 10,000 policemen. Thank you, Clement. Good morning. Ntunzi here in Mhlakeng.
Morning, Clement. I really do think the only way to bring the crime or serious crime rate down, there should be a deterrent. And once a deterrent is in place and it's known to society and it's implemented properly, it will definitely, definitely bring the crime rate down. That's my opinion. Thanks.
A good day, Clement. I agree with those who are saying that we need to decentralize the police, because you take a province like Limpopo, there is less murders, Clement, but there is another crime which is not recorded in our national statistics, like stock theft. So if we decentralize those, the powers of the police, then resources will be allocated in those other crimes which are not recorded in our national states, like stock theft. Thanks, David.
Thank you so much, David. And those who send WhatsApp voice notes, let's take Joe, who's calling us from Johannesburg. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Clement. How are you?
Good, man. Go ahead.
Good. Look, Clement, you know, the only way that we can at least bring this crime rate down, you know, we've got three spheres of government. It's national, the provincial, and the local. So it's no use to only incorporate the local metros into the SAPS and you leave the provincial out. Because if you realize, like for instance, in Gauteng, we only have three metros. The other municipalities, which are not metros, they are not part of that. Now you've got the Gauteng Traffic Police, which plays a very, very important role in a fight against crime. And more often, those people are being sidelined. Even if they make an arrest, they try to combine. The courts, they don't take them serious because according to the courts and according to the SAPS, they lack that the legal authority to play part in the crime prevention, which is a gap that needs to be closed up. Because if both the sub-national and the provincial government can play a role, they can all be incorporated into subs, and then we have one policy nationally. I think that will be the solution. But Gauteng Traffic Police, they are playing a very vital role in the fight against crime. But their efforts are not being recognized. And they are very much undermined, especially by the SAPS and the courts themselves.
Joe, in Johannesburg, thank you for your thoughts. Dr. De Kock, you can give me your reflections on what you've heard so far from the listeners, but also a question about the SAPS Act. Would that need to be redrafted? Because when you look at the constitution, it doesn't necessarily prevent devolution. You know, it provides the legal architecture for a hybrid framework of policing. So if we go that route, what kind of changes would you need to see in our legislature and regulations?
I'm not a legal expert, but I think it will definitely have to be redrawn. New legislation will have to go through, because as you say, it doesn't make that provision at present. But then if I can go back to your original question about the listeners, and then also a remark which was made by Mr. Maimani, and that is, you know, let's go to, I've already said that when it comes to visible policing, I think if a station is run properly and the relationship between security companies, the community and the police are sound, that can make a big difference. I've seen it with my own eyes. When we come to detectives and intelligence, then that is a bit different. On the intelligence side, we must distinguish between two kinds of intelligence. There's intelligence about the crime pattern, and the analysis of the crime pattern, and why is there a hotspot at a certain point, at a certain time, and that is done at the station. Not all stations is doing it properly, and in many stations, this is done properly, but the management doesn't use this information, and that is why their crime prevention is not working. Then there's intelligence about identities, people involved in crime, intelligence about structures involved in crime, and that is handled at a higher level than the station. Because you must remember, many of our crimes are committed, the criminals doesn't know station boundaries. I mean, if you take, for example, motor vehicle theft, the number one station there is Brooklyn for the last 4 years in South Africa. Now that criminals that operate in Brooklyn, they don't only operate there. They operate in all the stations surrounding Brooklyn, and they may operate as far as Johannesburg.
Mm.
So if you want to come to grips with those syndicates involved in motor vehicle theft, then you have to involve crime intelligence, and they operate at a little bit of a higher level than station itself.
Mm.
But they will take, if there's information, identity information available in the community, it will be escalated to them through the station structures.
Mm. Yeah.
The problem with crime intelligence is not, it's not the way it's structured. I think the problem is a lack of experience, a lack of motivation, a lack of funds. There's a lot of problems that have to be fixed in the existing crime intelligence. A massive lot of problems. Because for 12 years, it was very politicized. It actually spied on each other and not focus on organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the detectives. You know, a detective is not made overnight. A detective, you can't say, okay, well, I'm going to send this police member to a detective course, and then when he comes back, he's going to solve crimes, or she's going to solve crimes. It is a case of experience. It's a case of self-confidence, very much so. A detective must have confidence. Otherwise, he or she will not solve cases. Now, I must say, a lot of experience have left the police service. Many for these private structures now, which are also doing investigative work. Lots of them have left. But the few which still have the experience may be at the higher levels. You know, in the province, at the district level, the province level, or even at national level. And those people will have to mentor the younger, inexperienced ones that are at stations.
Mm, yeah. Musi, any reflections, anything you wanted to say as a last word?
Yeah, I mean, Clement, fighting crime, as I said, there's the function of prevention. But I think one of the things we mustn't forget, and I'm not trying to confuse citizens by saying lower, all of those types of things. It's important that we are all operating within the law. But there are already technology that is available that can help us in fighting crime. I can recall we tested software that looks at issues such as Shot Stopper, which identifies the frequency of when shots are being fired in a particular area so that you can capacitate those particular areas much quicker. Because you will remember, the apartheid system in terms of police was effectively to keep townships away from suburbs or blacks from whites. Now we have to think about, actually, when you even look at communities like Khayelitsha and Kukuletu, how do you increase, as those communities are increasing in numbers, how do you increase police availability? How do you use technology to fight better? And how do you integrate government systems in terms of data management? Because if you ask anyone to come and collect fingerprints, whether at home, whether at a break-in, you often find that the database isn't always completely, entirely integrated. So we need to use our technology. We need to be able to say, how do we stimulate intelligence? And ultimately, at every police station when you arrive, I often think when I see the police vehicles going around, it breaks my heart, because you can see this car is not going to be effective at responding when a faster, more modern car that is used by syndicate criminals is able to get away from it. So let us capacitate the policing. Let's make sure citizens know where it's worked most effectively is when a community has a relationship with a detective. They know who the criminals are. They can report them quickly. And if the detective knows they've got the equipment to fight the crime, we have a better effect. And that suburb that we looked at, we saw crime decrease.
Mm.
And also during 2010 World Cup, we saw crime decrease, particularly around murder, because we increased the number of police gave them the equipment, funded it properly, and suddenly we saw a decrease in the murder rate and contact crime. We have to repeat the same effort. And I'm saying we've already got available manpower at lower levels. Let's aggregate it and be much more aggressive at fighting crime.
Musi Maimane, leader of Build One South Africa. Thank you for making time. Dr. Chris de Kock, independent crime analyst, and Johan Berger, an independent consultant. I appreciate your time this morning. It's 8 minutes before 12.